You're wrong!
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the second special episode here at Remakers Mark. Remakers Mark podcast is part of the Math is Hard podcast and blog network. To find out more information about the podcasts and blogs on Math is Hard, check us out at mathishard.net. This is the second special episode that we've recorded as part of the Remakers Mark podcast. The first one talked about hypothetical Star Wars movies that we would love to see, and today we're changing it up a little bit and doing what we're calling the Untouchables. This came about when we were discussing segments that we would like to do as part of Remakers Mark episodes. So little fun things that we could add to the episode to, you know, spice it up a little bit, to make things a little bit different. So that's how it started, but we really didn't end up having a lot of time to do that in most of our episodes thus far. But it was such a cool idea to have Untouchables, which is movies that we found sacred, that we did not want to remake. And so today we're talking about those Untouchable movies. If someone actually picks the movie Untouchables, that's cool, but this is not about the movie Untouchables, but rather movies that we would not want to see remade for any reason whatsoever. So that's what today is all about. With me, as always, are my friends Lee High Octane. Lee, how are you today? And what was the last thing that you watched, either on TV or a movie?
I'm good, and I've recently been rewatching the Ken Burns documentary, The War.
Ooh, very good. How is that?
It's the best World War II documentary I've ever seen.
Wow. Besides Band of Brothers?
Well, that's a miniseries.
It's a documentary, dang it.
Yeah.
All right. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you doing, and what was the last thing you watched?
I'm lovely, and I am currently rewatching Season 3 of Arrested Development in great anticipation of the new episodes that will be out later this month.
Hear, hear. Yeah, I'm excited for that. Very, very much so.
I'm far too excited for it. It's going to be a letdown no matter what.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I have faith, but we'll see. It's interesting that they've been framing it as essentially like one chapter towards the eventual movie. So that kind of tempered my expectations a little bit, but I still think it'll be really good. I hope.
And it's 10 episodes that take place in the exact same period of time.
It's just all different stories within that time frame, right?
Yep. So there's the you could pause one episode at minute 5, start a new episode at minute 5, and see where the characters are in the same period. So
interesting.
That's kind of cool.
It's kind of like what we proposed for Clue a little bit, our remake of Clue.
Oh, that's right.
That time code kind of idea. Interesting. And then lastly, Andy Wicks, how are you? And what was the last thing that you watched on the old telly?
I'm very well, thank you. And this afternoon, I enjoyed an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood with my son. I learned how they make trumpets.
Nice.
Yes.
I assume it's with magic?
It is with magic. It's make-believe. I mean, trademark, Mr. Rogers.
Was it specifically the muted trumpet?
I didn't actually get that far in the episode. Benjamin, my son, lost interest, so I kind of had to follow him around. But I got so far to know as how they make the bell, attach it to the bell stem, and then how they buff it and polish it. It was pretty cool.
Interesting. When they demoed the trumpet, did Marilyn Monroe happen to walk by ever?
No, but Mr. Rogers did play the fanfare for King Friday.
On the trumpet?
Mm. On a little toy trumpet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Mr. Rogers is something else, tell you what. So if you are a regular Remakers Mark listener, you will notice that one person is missing here, and that is Mark Josting. Mark's wife is very, very pregnant. She could be having a baby at this very moment. So we wish them well. We don't know if that is the case, but he is absent for that reason. So by the time you hear this, they will hopefully have a happy, healthy Lil Josting. So that's what's going on there.
Get well soon.
Yes.
Condolences? No.
Condolences?
That's not right. No.
Indeed. All right. So as I said, this is an episode about the Untouchables, movies that we would not want to see remade. So this format is going to follow very similar to how we did with the Star Wars episode, which was we will each provide one pick. So we'll say one movie that we consider untouchable that we would not want to have remade. We will kind of give our reasoning behind that, and then we can discuss that as a group as well. So we're going to go opposite alphabetical order here. So Lee High Octane, you are first. What is your untouchable movie?
Well, my movie is, it's one that I was introduced to in college by another movie geek friend who I worked with. And it's an older movie, and I couldn't believe up to that point that I hadn't seen it, because after I watched it, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And every time I've watched it since, it's never really gotten old for me. It's sort of a timeless classic, and it's a very epic movie. And my movie is The Godfather. And in my opinion, it cannot and should not ever be remade.
Now, Johnny is my father's godson. And my father went to see this bandit. And he offered him $10,000 to let Johnny go. But the band leader said no. So the next day, my father went to see him, only this time with Luca Brasi. And within an hour, he signed a release for a certified check of $1,000.
How'd he do that?
My father made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
What was that?
Luca Brasi held a gun to his head, and my father assured him that either his brains or his signature would be on the contract.
First of all, the casting is perfect, in my opinion. There's no actor in any of those roles who does not belong there. And I don't know how you recast Marlon Brando anyway, but it's one of those movies that revived the genre. The gangster genre sort of died out in the 30s because of the moral atmosphere of the day. And The Godfather was sort of the comeback of that. I mean, there was a little bit of that with Bonnie and Clyde in the late 60s, but this one really brought it to the mainstream. And so much so that the actual gang members in New York started dressing like the characters in The Godfather. I just think that, for me at least, it's, you know, when I make my list of favorites, this has always been in the top five for me, and it's probably top three.
Yeah, deservedly so. It's a classic. So are you, this is a little bit separate, but are you a bigger fan of, let's go around the horn here. Let's say if you're a bigger fan of Godfather 1 or 2. So Lee, you start us off. Which one do you like better?
Probably 1. I like them both a lot, but 1 really sets the tone for the entire saga. So it's kind of like Star Wars for me, I guess, in a lot of ways. There's something really special about the first one. So for me, it's got to be the first one.
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels between the two for sure. A faster, more spry first one, even though the first Godfather is pretty long, it definitely moves at a quicker pace, and then a much more sprawling second one.
Right.
So Jared, how about you? Which do you like, the first one or the second one better?
Well, I was going to also mention that, like Lee, I only recently saw Godfather for the first time within the last probably 2 years. So I'm not sure why it was that I hadn't seen it until then. But yeah, I finally watched it. And I have not seen Godfather 2.
Ooh, you should. Ooh. It's very good.
I think you'll like it. It's definitely worth checking out.
So I'll say Godfather 1.
That's a well-informed choice. And Andy, how about you?
Jer, I'm glad you went first, because I feel a lot better now. I have also not seen Godfather Part 2.
What? Oh my gosh, what kind of film podcast are we?
What the hell?
A pretty sorry one. But
I haven't actually seen any of the movies we've been talking about.
I have seen the first Godfather, and I agree with Lee. It is a fantastic film. So like Jer, by default, I like Godfather 1 better.
Yeah. So Lee, the one question I would have about that is, you know, so many movies were informed by The Godfather. So then, I mean, you kind of have to differentiate between just being informed and, you know, essentially kind of being a ripoff of The Godfather and then a straight up remake. I mean, I think there's been so many movies that are like that, and I don't think any of them, except for maybe, you know, like Casino or Goodfellas or something like that, like something of Scorsese's ilk, you know, really lived up to that. There's been some good gangster movies, but never quite to the level of that. So I have to agree with you there. I think that would be really, really challenging. I don't know who would ever attempt that, but it would be really hard to do and do well.
First of all, I don't think anybody would ever get permission to do it. But secondly, it's I don't think there's a director out there who would have the audacity to think that he could remake it successfully, mostly because, I think it's cited as one of the greatest movies ever made. And, you know, it's, how do you do that? How do you remake one of the greatest movies ever made? So, yeah, it's...
Indeed.
And there have been a lot of, I guess, copycats. Well, not like direct ripoffs, but when I was talking about it redefining the genre, what I meant by that was the early 30s gangster movies. The reason that Hollywood had such a problem with them is because they romanticized these guys who were doing very horrible things. Well, when that genre was revived, there was sort of a caveat added to that, in that the main character, the gangster, always had to lose something. And that's been the formula for this genre ever since. He always has to lose something. Like, Michael loses his family. Henry Hill loses his freedom in a sense. God, what else? I'm trying to think of another gangster movie right offhand.
Well, something like The Killing. I mean, it all sort of falls apart for those people at that.
Yeah. Yep. In Heat, De Niro's character loses his life. So,
yeah, spoiler horn.
Yeah. They always have to lose something valuable to them. And that's sort of the formula now.
Yep. I think that's right on. Yeah. Good pick. I like that very much.
Thanks.
Jeremy, you have kind of two picks here, one from a friend of ours and then yours. Do you want to start with our mutual friend's pick and what that is and who that might be?
Yeah, absolutely. I was having a conversation about this episode and kind of explaining what we were going to be doing with an old friend of ours, Paul Tejan, who played kickball with all of us back when we were in a division champion kickball team. And just has kind of been in our circle for quite a while. And he and I were discussing movies and discussing this concept over dinner. And he threw out the movie Fletch.
Oh, man.
And
that's for a good one.
For multiple reasons. Our conversation kind of came around to a lot of the things that we talk about in our normal podcast, in that how do you remake a movie, especially like from the 80s or the 70s today, when a lot of that stuff, like you've said, Kyle, it would be solved with a phone call or Googling something or a cell phone or whatever. And so he kind of talked about, it would be impossible to remake that and have the same energy, and B, it just wouldn't make sense to remake that with the levels of security that are around now. And you wouldn't have a reporter from a newspaper with a fake beard wandering around a hospital or, you know, whatever else. And so just from a plausibility standpoint and from a dearly beloved movie standpoint, he chose that one.
It's a good one. It's also one that's reliant upon a very specific talent, that being Chevy Chase. And I don't know that it's not necessarily that there's someone that could fill those shoes. I don't know if there is, to be honest, but something where it's that tied into that individual character. I think, you know, in that kind of, you know, prime Saturday Night Live era, there were a few of those where it was like relying so much upon that person's style and personality. And, you know, I think it seems like we have a little bit less of that. It's usually a bit more balanced. But yeah, that's a good one.
It seems like that era, that early 80s era, there was a lot of movies being written around a person. And it wasn't...
I agree.
I have an idea for a movie. Who should we cast? It was, we need to get Bill Murray a movie. And what should we make it about? I know. Let's make him a camp counselor. Or let's, you know, whatever else. So it seems like that's kind of been gone by the wayside. And I don't, you know, maybe it's because there isn't the talent pool, or maybe it's just a different era or whatever with studios, but it doesn't seem like there's Chevy Chase movies and, you know, Bill Murray movies and Eddie Murphy movies and all that kind of stuff that there was back in the 80s.
I would argue that Will Ferrell kind of comes to mind as maybe an exception to that rule.
I was just going to say that.
And, or, Will Ferrell and his little ensemble of, like John C. Reilly and, a couple ones,
Jack Black.
But I agree with you that the incidence of those things seems far less than what it used to be.
Yeah, I think it's more like troops now, kind of like the Seth Rogen, Paul Feig, Judd Apatow troupe. You know, like they've got that kind of crew that does a lot of, you know, movies that don't even, whether explicitly tie together or just tie together stylistically a little bit more. But yep, indeed. And so how about your actual pick, Jer? What was your individual pick?
Well, my pick is one of my favorite movies, and I am also involved in Nerd Night, which we've mentioned before. But up in northern Minnesota, we do a monthly gathering of nerds where we give presentations on different things, from science to sci-fi to whatever else there is out there. And I gave a presentation about a year ago that basically tried to answer the question, if you were stranded on a desert island and could only bring five movies with you, which five would you bring? And I looked at it from a semi-scientific standpoint of defining movies via genre, but then also defining them via a certain concept that there's been a few books written about that kind of defines any story can fit into one of seven story types. And so, from that, I kind of made a chart of the different genres and the different stories, and found a movie to fit into each part of the graph, and then looked at what movie combined all of those stories, combined all of those genres into one, and that was Princess Bride. So that's my choice.
That's nice. A good one.
That is a good one. Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a commonality between a lot of movies in that in terms of what it did well, but I don't think there's any movie that did so many things so well. I mean, it's a fantasy comedy drama, fantasy drama romantic comedy. I mean, it's like adventure. All these things that, adventure that usually trying to do too many of those things waters down many of those aspects. So then the comedy isn't great or the action isn't great. And it's not like this could hold up necessarily to like today's action movies, but it's still really entertaining. I mean, it mm-hmm. does all those things very well, which is really hard to do.
Well, and I think that if it were to be remade, and we've talked about this before, you have to make it bigger. You have to and it's just the nature of where we're at in movies right now. Is an action movie has to be action and has to be crazy, and it just would lose the charm and just the quiet the quietness of that story, because it really is a fairy tale, and it's telling a sweet little story with some very fun, adventurous themes in it as well. And if anybody tried to remake it today, it would be too big and it would lose that little magic charm that it has.
It would become more one dimensional, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah. Because they would be focusing on sticking to one genre to sell or to make money off of it instead of being true to the story.
Yeah, and everything would be elevated. The sword fights would be crazy, and the explosions would be giant, and Andre the Giant would be some CG 10-foot tall thing, and you know, it would be too much, and it would lose the charm. It would lose the charm.
I could see if somebody tried to remake it now, I could see them hiring Tim Burton to do it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because I love Tim Burton, but I would hate that. Yeah. I just know immediately that I would hate whatever he did with it.
I could see a Wes Anderson version of that.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit closer in that's a little bit closer in like mood. Wow. Yes. I don't know. I'm very much ready for Wes Anderson to do something different, and that would certainly be different. I'll give you that. But yeah, I think that makes sense.
I agree with you, Jared. I don't think it should be remade, and I think a lot of that has to do with how well it's cast.
Yeah, and then there's that too. There's just the perfect blend of sort of an ensemble cast that really wasn't an ensemble cast. It was pretty much some four or five principals, but there was just so many great cameos and so many just perfect little characters being played in that movie. And it came out at the right time. It was the right blend of pre CG, and so everything was stuntmen and real, and you could see that. You could even the flubs, you see the springboards and the floor and the different things like that. Like, it's just so perfect.
We were talking about in pre-production what one of the questions we were considering asking at the beginning was what was our favorite movie soundtrack? This one might go down as one of the worst movie soundtracks, I think. It's terrible. It's so corny. But it's part of its charm.
It's not a soundtrack. It's one song, isn't it?
I feel like there's a scene. I think it's when Humperdinck is trying to track them at the sword fight scene or something like that. And it's just like this cheesy keyboard thing. I'm not sure. It's popping into my head. And I remember thinking, this is terrible.
For the life of me, I can't even think of what the music sounds like because I guess I've never paid attention to it.
Yeah, certainly not memorable.
If you listen through the credits, there's actually a song written by...
Please say Kenny Loggins.
I think it's one of the guys... Who's the lead singer for Dire Straits?
Mark Knopfler? Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, you're right.
It's Mark Knopfler actually wrote a song with words.
Yep, I do remember
everything
that.
To the tune of the... And it's terribly cheesy.
My love is like... A storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel.
My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel.
Wow.
You're welcome.
That's awesome.
You still consider it untouchable?
Ladies love Cool J.
The soundtrack is touchable. The movie is untouchable.
There you go.
There we go.
Indeed. So because I suck at the alphabet, I totally skipped myself. So I'm going to go. I'm used to going the other direction.
Kyle's bad at backwards alphabet.
Old habits are hard to break.
I thought it was math that was hard.
Oh! Yeah, well,
apparently it's more than just math for me. So the movie that I picked is one that I first saw as a junior high aged young lad, as it were. And so I was like, I really enjoyed movies. Like my parents and I always watched movies, and I had like access to a lot of movies as a kid. And so, you know, I was very into film, but I didn't see anything that was particularly like, I don't know, auteur-ish, you know, anything too terribly weird. It was all really entertaining stuff, which is fine when you're, you know, growing up, but like, you know, I was into different things. I was into interesting things. Like I saw Natural Born Killers, and I thought that was really interesting. And I saw The Crow. And so it was like that slightly moody, slightly moody, kind of dark, like matching up with your teenage angst years kind of thing. So like that kind of stuff really spoke to me. And then one day I remember going into the video store with my parents and you know, they picked a movie and I picked a movie and I had heard about this particular movie and I knew nothing about it, just that I had heard about it. And the movie was A Clockwork Orange by Stanley Kubrick.
Excellent.
And seeing that opened my eyes to what cinema could be. You know, it sounds so hyperbolic, but it's totally true. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen. And the moment it stopped, I wanted like everything that world had to offer, you know, just like it just changed how I could view things and what I looked for and how things appeared to me. I mean, it was just one of those like total life-changing movies. I mean, it's like the first time you see Star Wars, you can't see sci-fi the same ever again. This did that for all movies for me. And so I think that is impossible to remake, largely because of the direction of Kubrick. He is, as far as I am concerned, he's the greatest director ever. He has some issues. He tends to be a little bit cold, in general, but from a filmmaking perspective, he's untouchable, I think. From a storytelling perspective, he does it in a unique manner that is very much his own, but he tells stories very well, even though it can come off as cold at that same time. But everything that he did in this movie, in terms of the futuristic dystopian world, in terms of the music that was used, in terms of the casting, everything was spot on. I honestly don't know how any of that could be redone. So Clockwork Orange is my pick.
I agree with you 100%. For me, you know, it was an eye-opener too. Like this and like Pulp Fiction were the two that completely changed the way I watched movies. So yeah, I agree with you.
You know, I almost in the running for what I was going to pick was The Shining for almost the exact same reasons, and largely because of Kubrick. And I totally agree with you in that he is head and shoulders above just about every other director that there is out there, and just the way that he can set a table of for you to just watch and feast on is just unparalleled. And Clockwork Orange is right up there for me too, but prefer The Shining. But it's the same thing. It's just he creates a world and you just get wrapped up into it, and nobody else can do that the same way.
Yeah, it's not one that I seek out very often. I think I've for a movie that I would call maybe my favorite movie of all time, I think I've only seen it maybe three times, which those two statements should not reflect each other seemingly, but it's not one that you seek out. It's not like, you know, people say they love The Shawshank Redemption, which is a brilliant movie, but that's one that you can watch like 30 times and still enjoy the heck out of it each time. And it's an enjoyable movie. I don't think Clockwork Orange is an enjoyable movie at all. I mean, not from like a, from a yay perspective, you know, it's pretty bleak. And at the end, you know, it's there, not a lot of good comes from it, but at the same time, it is an amazing movie, and I wouldn't want to change that.
Well, if it isn't fat, stinking Billy Goat, Billy Boy in Poison. How art thou, thou globby bottle of cheap, stinking chip oil? Come and get one in the yarbles, if you have any yarbles, you eunuch jelly thou.
I don't know if you guys have read the book or not, but the book has a very different ending. The book ends with Alex, the main character, like living out his life in happiness. And the book obviously came before, well, not obviously, but the book did come before the movie. So this is based on a book by Anthony Burgess called A Clockwork Orange. And the last chapter is him kind of like living out his life and living a very seemingly pedestrian, just kind of everyday life. And when I, having seen the movie, when I read that, I was like, F this, man, this blows. I was so upset. I like threw the book down when I read that. I was like, this is dumb. Like, I love the movie ending. So yeah, you know, that's just the decision that he made and the choice that he made to do that, I think was, you know, that was his choice to make. But man, it just, as from a movie perspective, and I just don't know how you could do that today. I mean, like everything from the Wendy Carlos score would sound antiquated now, but then it was so forward thinking. It doesn't say sound antiquated now, but I think if you tried to redo it, it would feel that way, or it would just feel like you were trying to replicate that, which very rarely comes off well. The acting, I think, is top notch. I mean, the language of it, I think that could probably be replicated, but just the way they did that in the original was just so outstanding. The NADSAT kind of made up language, which is a little bit of Russian, a little bit of Norwegian, a little bit of English slang. There's all this stuff that goes into it. So
yeah, it's that one's definitely in my top 10. But yeah, like what you were saying about it's not a pleasant movie to watch. It's not a leisurely movie to watch. It's not something that you just, oh, I feel like watching Clockwork Orange today. You know, it's not something you sit back, relax, and just enjoy and have popcorn and stuff. It's not a popcorn movie, I guess. Not like Star Wars.
Put in Schindler's List while we make dinner.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. There's a podcast that I enjoy, a film related podcast called Film Spotting, and they do like top five or top 10 lists occasionally. And one of them that they did was movies that they will be very happy to never watch again. So it's movies that they loved, but they have no interest in seeing more than once. And I think Clockwork Orange is not quite that severe, but it's close. Like, I think the one that was mentioned by both the hosts on that one was Requiem for a Dream, you know, which is just like it's a miserable experience, but you kind of want to go through it once. Like, it's a fantastic movie. It's just, you don't want to relive that. It's just so intense. Like Grave of the Fireflies is kind of the same too. I think that same kind of downtrodden, oh my God, what's going on here? And again, Clockwork Orange is not quite there, but pretty darn close at a lot of times. So that's mine. Andy, finish us off here. What was your pick?
My pick's a little sillier than A Clockwork Orange. It's a lot sillier than A Clockwork Orange.
I know what Andy's going to say.
My pick should not be a secret to anyone.
I do too.
A part of this podcast. I've been very, very vocal in public about my opinions on this movie and its untouchableness. I have chosen Three Amigos.
Yes.
Brilliant 1986 comedy directed by John Landis and starring our favorite three comedic actors from the 80s, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase,
Phil Hartman,
Martin Short, Phil Hartman, John Lovitz,
Joe Mantegna.
And I just noticed this when I was flipping through the IMDb page a little earlier. One of my favorite scenes from that movie is when the three amigos stroll into the Mexican cantina shortly after it's been shot up by these two German mercenaries. And the patrons of the bar are meant to think that these three amigos are the guys that the German mercenaries spoke of, and, you know, intimidatingly. So the three amigos, they end up doing a song and dance routine to the tune of My Little Buttercup.
You and I will settle down in a cottage built for two. Dear little buttercup, sweet little buttercup.
One of the best comedic scenes in movie history, in my opinion. But the bartender who's there, who sings the line, My Little Buttercup, his acting name, the name of that actor is Fred Asparagus. And I think that's just precious.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I sort of hope that that's not a stage name. That's
sadly, it is.
His legit straight-up name.
No, it's not. I know, which took a little of the shine off of it, but whatever.
Still pretty great.
But this movie, to me, it's right up my alley in terms of my sense of humor. It's very sophomoric. It pulls no punches about that, but it does it in a way that there's a certain aspect about it that it's not sophomoric humor in the more modern sense, where I think it becomes much more raunchy. And I'm not disparaging that. I'm just saying it's different. It was a different kind of sophomoric humor. It was a little cleaner, a little simpler. But in my opinion, still incredibly funny. I think the raunchiest joke that they do is when a biplane flies overhead and Martin Short says, I think that's a mail plane. And I'll let you watch the movie to finish the joke. I laugh audibly every time I watch this movie, and I have to have seen it 50 times. I enjoy it. It makes me happy. I don't see how this movie could be improved. I don't think there are comedic actors with that kind of chemistry that would be able to replicate or improve upon the comedy that was in this movie. And to me, this is the pinnacle of a comedy movie, in my opinion. So therefore it is my untouchable.
Yet it's on our list of ones to potentially remake, right?
I
put that on there because I disagree. I think it could be remade, but no. I understand your argument, and it is a good one. And part of why I think it could be remade so easily is that it is a period piece. It takes place in the 30s?
No, the 19-teens. Get your history right.
19-teens.
The 19s.
So, It's not like a movie from the 80s that wouldn't make any sense if we made it now. It's a movie that takes place in the 19-teens. And
in the silent movie era, put it that way.
In the silent movie era. And I think from a logic standpoint, you could easily redo it again. It would just be, could you find the jokes? Could you find the people, the like you said, the chemistry to pull it off? And I think Steve Zahn could.
If we put, here's what we could do. Steve Zahn, Mads Mikkelsen, and Meryl Streep. We may have a chance.
This is like the beginning of a joke, like a priest, a rabbi, and a...
and a Mads Mikkelsen.
They go to a bar, yeah.
But I don't think you'd be able to coordinate their schedules. I just don't think it would happen.
No.
You're probably right.
Yeah. So, Three Amigos. There you go.
That's a great nice. Pick. Yeah, I'm with Jared on that. I think it can be remade, but I don't think that it necessarily
You're
should.
Wrong.
I think, Psycho shouldn't have been remade, and it was. So, you know,
yeah,
Three Amigos could join that rank if we choose to do so. But I think you put up a good fight there, Andy. Absolutely.
It would be Three Amigos Part 2, Four Amigos, or something like that.
If there's a studio out there who wants to lose money, they'll remake it shot for shot, line for line, with actors who can't live up to the originals.
Gosh. I'd still see it, though, just to see the spectacle.
Paul and I actually were talking about the Three Amigos, and And he said, well, what if you did it, but you kind of put it in a different setting? And I said, oh, you mean like in space? That's called Galaxy Quest. They did that.
Touche.
Not far off. Yep.
Yeah. It's the same. I mean, boiled down to a one sentence plot, it's the same thing.
Yes. I would give you that.
Actors get confused for the roles that they play and have to fight off the evil, what have you.
Have to live it out in real life. Yes.
And is the bad guy named The Handsome?
Because he should be. And his assistant named Boss.
Yeah.
The Handsome. That's awesome.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, Jerry. You're right. I'm not going to call it a remake because I don't think it is.
Oh, it's not. But it is conceptually.
Conceptually, they are parallel. And I think the Galaxy Quest is also a very funny movie, which just goes to show you the formula works because it's pure gold.
Take the Amigos clothes.
And all those movies you made, did you ever hear the word nada? Anyway, sorry. I could be nice. Quoting the movie for the next half hour.
Yes.
So we'll very be. Old.
We'll one. Just stop recording and Andy will just still be at the microphone spouting quotes. Well, speaking of
face.
The handsome, gentlemen, this was a darn fine time. So thanks again to Andy, Jer, and Lee for participating here today. This Remakers Mark special episode was brought to you by, I don't know, beer maybe? That sounds pretty good to me.
Generic brand Coke Zero?
You, Meyer Coke Zero.
Yeah, there you go.
No, thank you. So we'll be back, I'm sure, soon with a full-on non-special episode of Remakers Mark. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this. And gentlemen, as always, it's been a darn fine time. And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.